Hi, and welcome back to Market Talk. My name is Jamie, and today I'm going to be talking about the flash crash of 2010, a very niche event that occurred in the stock markets that led to quite a big dramatic shift, a massive downturn during the month of May. I hope you enjoy. Now, a lot of people do forget about this, but this was one of the most sudden and severe market downturns, in fact, in financial history. And it really started in May of 2010. Now, we have to remember that this was quite an uncertain year, politically and economically. Most countries across the Western world were still recovering from the global financial crisis of 2008. And in fact, most of Europe, for example, was still suffering under many issues. In fact, we started to see, for example, the rise of austerity programs as governments across Europe looked to curb their debt by reducing their fiscal deficit. So the difference between how much they spend and how much they bring in the form of tax revenue. And this, of course, brought a lot of instability. Austerity as an idea, for example, was and probably still is deeply unpopular. The idea of curbing public spending on things like healthcare, for example, infrastructure, in order to try and reduce the national debt, is obviously going to be quite unpopular. And therefore, there was a lot of instability across the globe at the time. Now, in the US, which is what we're going to focus on and where the crisis actually happened, we also did see hallmarks of a potential austerity bill. Now, this is because we saw the Obama administration take office amidst the depths of the financial crisis in 2009. And as part of their response, they initiated huge spending packages. We saw with TARP as well under Bush, as well as following aid in the form of tax breaks. We saw lots of government support to try and boost and revitalize the economy in the US following the financial crisis. So there was a lot of instability in 2010 leading up to the flash crash, as well as the UK election, of course, which took place this year, which brought about, again, a lot more anxiety, which was already pressured on markets given the austerity debate, which I talked about before. Now, on the day of the crash, the 6th of May of 2010, we did see a lot of volatility and tension even before it happened. For example, the VIX index, VIX, is a good measure of volatility, and we saw this significantly increase during the early hours of the day. Now, in terms of what actually happened, we saw at around 2:30 p.m., we saw a very aggressive shift in trading patterns. We saw that the S&P 500 futures, the S&P 500 representing an index of the biggest 500 companies in the US by market cap, so these are companies like Apple, Microsoft, and other blue chip companies. We saw the S&P 500 futures, so this is a financial product that tries to predict the future value of the index, so how, for example, investors think the company will perform, how their earnings per share will increase. So the S&P 500 futures saw a dramatic decrease in liquidity, so the ease to try and buy and sell the financial instrument, from $6 billion to $2.7 billion. Now, this is remarkable. This is an over 50% fall in the matter of minutes at 2:30 p.m. And actually, between 2:32 and 2:45 p.m., we saw a huge sell-off of 75,000 of these mini contracts, which were worth around $4.1 billion, which triggered a following chain reaction. Now, this is because of the nature of different contracts in financial markets. For example, a lot of investors will put in orders such as stop losses, which would mean that they automatically exit any trade if the share price, or in this case, the price of an index, falls below a certain value. For example, if I buy a company shares, let's say Apple, which is trading at, let's say, $200, and I have a stop loss of 180, This means that if the share price of Apple falls below 180, I will automatically sell the shares that I have in the company. Now, this was partly the reason why, for example, we saw a huge chain reaction following the massive sell order of these mini contracts between 2:32 and 2:45 p.m. because of things like stop losses, which means that investors automatically exit certain trades. Now, this exacerbated market drops, not only, of course, within this market, but also within the global framework as well, but primarily in the US. In fact, we saw that the Dow Jones Index, which is primarily full of industrials, plunged over 1,000 points, or around 9% in just a few minutes. Now, that is remarkable. 9% in a few minutes is a calamity for any company, let alone an index as big as the Dow Jones Index. Now, at 2:45, we saw that trading on the E-mini, which is where these S&P 500 futures were being traded, the ones that I said, you know, had these huge sell orders and saw the huge decrease in liquidity, trading was halted on this index, which did help to stabilize prices. In fact, the market did begin to recover shortly thereafter, with the Dow Jones Index, for example, regaining quite a lot of its losses within the following hour. Now, in terms of the contributing factors and the sort of market impacts of this, we've seen that analysis has shown and has pointed to a $4 billion trade by Waddell & Reed, which is a sort of investment company, on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is a key trigger for this event, the key trigger for the huge decrease in the value of the S&P 500 futures. And this was compounded by, again, like I said, other bets, other things like the stop losses, and also algorithmic trading strategies, which exacerbated the selling pressure on this index. You have to remember, of course, you have lots of algorithms with various quant firms, hedge funds looking to try and pounce when you see a huge fall in any product, let alone an index or a future like the S&P 500. And the immediate impact, of course, was this short-term chaos, this sort of bizarre price movements where stocks like Accenture, for example, the huge accounting company, plummeted to mere cents, unbelievable, before rebounding. Now, again, more analysis post-crash resulted in new regulations which targeted these sort of high-frequency trading practices, including a lot of measures to try and prevent such occurrences in the future. Now, of course, we have still seen a lot of market volatility following what happened in 2010. For example, in a lot of the commodity markets, we've seen rapid fluctuations in the price of things like coca in the last few months. And also just broadly, since the pandemic especially, we've seen, again, huge trading volumes and swings in various commodities. But we haven't really seen it too much in the equity markets, where a market as prominent as the Dow Jones Index, for example, and other very prominent indices, they haven't really seen such falls that they saw during the flash crash of 2010 since then. And I think this is in part due to the huge regulatory oversight that we've seen since then, and also the emergence of more volatile indices. So, for example, the rise of cryptocurrencies, for example, we've seen a lot of investors and speculators who otherwise would have speculated on markets like the equity markets, like the Dow Jones, now moving across to where there is more potential in things like cryptocurrencies. So there we have it, the massive $1 trillion worth of valuations plummeted in a matter of 15 minutes due to the flash crash, the rapid fall in the S&P 500 futures, which again triggered a huge sell-off across a wide spectre of different indices. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.